Welcome to Millennials Love, where we discuss the culture, trends, and obsessions of the millennial generation. I'm your host, Sharon Haddon, and whether you are a millennial or you know a millennial, you're guaranteed to hear something useful, something fun, and something inspiring. Today's guest is Jasper Smith, president of the Urban Financial Services Coalition, San Francisco Bay Area.
Hey, Sharon. Hello, everybody. Pleasure to be on this evening and looking forward to having a good discussion with you tonight about money.
Money, definitely. What? I told you, I think in May, and I was, what, $25,000 or more in debt? And I've literally gotten that down, probably conquered about $5,000 of that debt, thanks to you. I want you to tell everybody what's the difference between good debt and bad debt, or, you know, is there even such a thing?
I think it, you really got to look at it from the situation. So, I mean, people have talked about good versus bad debt for the longest time, but I kind of look at it from a situation, right? So in a business owner's perspective, you know, debt could be good because they're using that as leverage to, you know, produce a product or a good. And so they're going to be able to make enough money to pay back that debt. So it ended up being a really positive thing in their life. You know, the same thing could be said for a student loan, is that we take out these loans to be able to afford this education in hopes of landing this job that will allow us to pay back our loan in a timely fashion. The last one is really credit cards. And I think it could be a good debt if you're using the credit card effectively, taking advantage of the rewards and all the points that exist on the credit cards that are offered now. But that's only if you're using your card and paying off the balance in full. Now, what happens where people look at credit cards as being bad or bad debt is this excessive spending that people tend to do, and they keep this balance month over month. You're incurring all the interest charges. Then it becomes more of a bad or a negative thing in your life. You know, really is looking at each person's situation and figuring out, is this debt really helping us to make more money or is it costing us more money?
Ooh, ouch. So I am definitely on the negative end of that spectrum, but we're going to get through that. There's been tons of research that's come out. Student loans are the reason that millennials aren't starting businesses. There have been statistics that say millennials are more burdened by financial hardships than, you know, in comparison to previous generations. Do you witness that from, you know, the clients that you have or the people that you work with in your organization? Do you find that the younger people have more financial hardships than previous generations?
To some degree, yes, I do. I think it's partly because if you look at it from the start, most of our families don't understand the language of money. And so here we are coming up now, and so we've adopted, you know, what our family has, this limited knowledge of financial matters and products, et cetera, or they have these bad habits which we have adopted. And so we pretty much start out as a disadvantage. Back in the day, it was all about education, 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 which is why most millennials now, of course, school is not even it's nothing you negotiate. You know to go to school and get an education. So we never had a good starting block because our parents weren't financially savvy. You know, they were just trying to survive and working and work. And then it was, okay, now I focus on education. It was all about education. And now it's like, okay, now we got all the education, but then we never got the education around money. An interesting thing, too, is, and I've had a lot of friends, you know, since we've been out of college where they've moved back home because they didn't get the job and now they have the student loans. And typically, you know, they're at home and I hope that when you're at home, you don't have that really large expense of paying rent. Most people say they stay at home to save money, but they don't. They're so used to having this extra freedom and they don't have this other bill, so that money usually goes to something fun. And it's not working on paying down debt. They're not thinking about saving. They're not thinking about investing. And so we continue to just never really care enough to really start the program and learning more about money. And as time goes on, it does become a heavy burden of how long am I going to have this? And at some point, we hope that you know, the light bulb goes off in your head. You say, you know what, I got to make a change. And whatever that change may be, you know, hopefully, you know, millennials will get on the boat early.
Does, you know, your organization, Urban Financial Services Coalition, kind of touch on those subjects of how to maximize living at home or jumping on that wagon to become a financial rock star? What are some of the programs that you offer?
Yeah, we do a ton of community stuff ranging from, you know, elementary schools and doing financial literacy or financial empowerment workshops to, you know, all the way up through college, even adult classes. And so I think we can all learn a thing or two, and there's no monopoly on a good idea. I think we cover such a broad range because financial services is such a broad arena. There's so many different products, and certain products make sense for certain people depending on what stage of life that you're in. And it's part of just exposing people to the information, right? A lot of people never got the memo. And so my organization really helps people to say, hey, well, depending on where in your life, you should be thinking about this. You know, a lot of people got caught up in the whole housing bubble back in 08. And so it was, well, do I keep my house? You know, do I short sell it? And so we've had some initiatives around those issues. And, you know, we're coming out of that mess a little bit, but there's so much to clean up. And so we try to always make sure we're relevant with what's going on around the world. Not necessarily what we think they should know. It's just you tell us what we'll come and deliver. And we have a lot of different professionals ranging, you know, from insurance professionals, retirement, investors, real estate, attorneys, accountants, you know, bankers. And so we're able to come in and give a really good overall presentation or workshop that's catered to our audience.
Oh, wow. This is really a one stop. It's not just I need help building my emergency fund or I want to invest. Okay, no, that is amazing. You really don't find that. You kind of end up having to piece a plan together. Well, so with all the budgeting tools that are out there, like I've used Mint.com. It's a good kind of red flag to say, hey, this is due, or, you know, you're overspending, or even their automatic investing services like Betterment.com. Do you think those tools are making it easier for people to manage their finances?
I don't know if I want to use the word easy, Sharon. I would say they are simple to use in terms of the application and how they're able to assist you. I think they make them extremely convenient because you can typically have them on your phone. And most people have a cell phone or a smartphone that goes everywhere with you. So there's that convenience factor. But I think the tools like you named, they're only as useful as the user allows it to be. For example, I know a lot of people who own treadmills, elliptical machines in their home. And so the whole reason why people make those purchases is that now you've cut out that reason of why you don't have to go to the gym because you're too busy, right? However, I know a handful of people that actually use the equipment that they purchase for their home gym. Because typically when I've seen somebody with a treadmill, there's usually a shirt, a coat hanging on it, drying clothes on it, it's collecting dust, you know, the pets are laying on it, that's their second bed or something, but it's never, you know, it's just, if you're going to use it, yes, it's perfect. It's in your house. You have no excuse not to use it. So with all these various applications that are being created, I think they're really good if you stick to it.
Everybody's trying to lose weight, you know, so in comparing it to the fitness realm, it's like, hey, either way, doesn't matter how simple we make it for you, how convenient, you still got to get in there and do the work.
Got to put in your time and make it happen.
Give me your top three things people would need to know about managing their finances.
The first thing, of course, I would hope that you have a job or employment. If you're gainfully employed, of course, that's the first piece. Got to have some income to manage. Mm-hmm. I've heard that before. A lot of people say, well, I don't have any finances to manage, but they have a job. So if you have any type of income, then, of course, we can start the process. But if there were three things I would, you know, share with people is that, one, you need to master the budget. The budget is the quintessential step of everything that we do financially, because at any given point in time, you need to know what's coming into your pockets or your bank account and going out. And granted, it's not easy, Sharon, because a lot of people struggle with that initial step. You can't walk before you crawl, right? And so the budget is the crawling part. You need to crawl and really, it's not fun when you're trying to learn something new, but you have to start with the budget. And I kind of share this with people when I do workshops. is, you know, think of yourself as a business. And we know that any business that exists, exists for one reason, and that's to make money. And if you are a business, whether you have, whether you own a business or not, if you think of yourself as a business, you should do whatever it takes in your power to be successful financially. However, when it comes to our personal finances, we let some things slip. So I'll tell you, so if I'm a business, I don't want to not make money. I don't want to have this fear around looking at money. I got to face it. I have to face it and then figure out what's my next step. But the budget would be the first, you know, the first thing that I would tell people. They have to have a stronghold on their budget. The second point is start now or take action, however you want to phrase it, but you have to do something. You know, a lot of people get what's called paralysis by analysis, and they read all these things, and they ask all these experts, they do all these seminars and workshops, and, you know, they're hot and bothered for that hour or that 2 hours, however long the session is, and then they leave and don't do anything. You know, there are a lot of financial experts that exist in this country, and I've come into contact with a couple of people like, oh, you know, I bought such and such's workbook, or I'm doing their program, and I'm like, well, how's it going? You know, I never opened the book. You know, I never followed the 9-step program, the 10-step program. And so, you know, people, again, like that exercise equipment, they spend all this money and do all this time and effort, but they don't take any action. As soon as you know what you want to do, you have to take some steps. And that's what most people don't do. And I encourage you, if you're trying to get a better stronghold on your finances and money, you know, you can only do but so much reading. At some point, we've got to take a step forward. The third point I would say is you have to invest. And investing makes a lot of people nervous, primarily because they don't understand it. If you start investing early, it gets easier for you to amass some type of wealth because of time. And so one of the things that I did, actually, when I first got into the industry, I would ask a lot of successful financial planners and advisors, you know, hey, what do you, I was, you know, 22 and I got into the industry, 21, and I just straight up asked people, hey, what should I be thinking about at 21? You know, they're like, oh, invest. And I said, oh, I don't understand that. And I said, well, you know, you may not fully understand a lot of things you do in your life, but yet you do them because you know they're right. Now, people know they should invest, Sharon. They know they should be investing, Sharon, but they don't. They know that they should, but yet they continue to shy away from it. So embrace the realm of investing. And with all the resources that are out there, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to get started at some spot.
Well, when you say investing, do you mean more like investing in the stock market or being an angel investor in one of your friend's businesses or investing in your retirement fund? Could you clarify just a little of what that critical investment piece looks like?
The things you just ran off, yes. It could be an investment in your retirement. It could be an investment into a business. It could be, you know, you investing to buy a property. It could be, like you mentioned, you're an angel investor, so you're hoping, you know, you're a funder for somebody else's dreams. Some type of investment, you know, that's going to allow you to make money that you don't necessarily have to work for. You know, because you having a regular job, you can only work so many hours in the day. Therefore, we always have to have our money doing something for us alongside us also working our day job. Education is an investment, Sharon, honestly. I know I want to be a specialist in a certain field. Maybe there's a certification that I need to, you know, go get. So if I need to invest in maybe that education to go get that certification, that's going to allow me to charge higher fees for my business or help me to be certified in a specialty. And so it allows me to have an opportunity, you know, somewhere along the line. So investment, you need to invest in something. Invest in yourself. Invest in a business. Invest in the stock market, real estate. You have to invest.
No, absolutely. So we got master the budget. That's critical point number one. Start now, and then investing, whether that's in yourself, in a business. Those are the three critical points. If you want to manage your finances, those are the three things you need to think about.
Yes, ma'am.
Jasper, I have to ask, what is your advice to others who are aspiring to be financial rock stars?
All right, so I have a couple here for you, some pearls of wisdom. The first one is to write down your goal. Just write down a number. Hey, at some point in my life, I always want to have $10,000 in my bank account. You know, you should write that number down and post it on your refrigerator, your wall, your mirror. But writing your goals down serves as your reminder. If you're constantly reminding yourself of why you're doing the things that you're doing, that goal that you wrote down will haunt you. And it's kind of true. I did the same. I live this stuff. So I have some financial goals that I have written down, and I look at them every single morning. And so all of my actions, you know, are geared towards making that goal become a reality. And I love crossing off things off my list. So, of course, it feels really, really good when you achieve a goal or reach a milestone and you're able to cross it off or check it off, whatever your therapy is around accomplishing goals, because mine's crossing that thing out, and that lets me know, Jasper, you did it. It feels great. It's great. Plus, another thing, too, about your goals when you write them down, it serves as a good testimony, you know, because your goals when you first start out may be small in stature, and as you kind of get more comfortable around finances, you may start setting a little more stretch goals, if you will. You know, these unrealistic, they're unattainable, but you know, maybe there's a chance you can get them if you really work hard and do what you're supposed to do. So it serves as that extra juice you might need. And hey, that number looks really large, but you know, I might have to do some things maybe a little different if I want to reach that stretch goal. And I think it'll challenge all of us to do a little bit more. So just having some goals written down and maybe having a few that are a little out there, a little unrealistic, just to stretch ourselves a little bit. If you've written down your goals, I think, we have access to so much information, it's unbelievable. We should read a lot more. And when we see something that we agree with or disagree with, we should always do another search and check those references or sources that they're coming from. But, you know, it really burns me up, Sharon, when people say, I didn't know this or I never heard of this before. And, you know, I'll see their smartphone. I'm like, did it ever dawn on you that you could just type in that word and hit search?
Yeah, like ask Google.
So I think it's becoming more aware and knowing that there are a ton of resources. And granted, they're not all created equally. So you'll have some people who have strong opinions about certain products or theories and methods as it applies to money. But I think it's just, depending on what those goals are, you know, you need to find some sources that are credible and just read. We got to do it. And then outside of once you've gathered all this information, and again, this is kind of my biggest point to make for most people, if you can do all of this on your own and be successful at it, you do not need the assistance of a financial planner, advisor, coach. But financial planners and advisors exist for a reason. And so a lot of people don't use them, but yet they're the exact person they need to hold them accountable. And depending on, you know, their expertise, can give you some real stories about their clients and why these products, you know, make sense. It's scary, Sharon. I had a young lady once. She got a referral and she needed some assistance, and she was a little apprehensive about meeting with me. And so I didn't push too hard. So I go back to my friend who set up the referral. And I said, hey, what's going on? She said, well, she's not really sure if she wants to talk to you, but she's got a lot of questions about investing. And I said, didn't you tell her I know about investments? And so here I am, the source that she needs. It's crazy. But I think we tend to complicate this whole process a lot because it's such a frightening topic that we just lose our mind.
No, absolutely. Either lose our mind, or I find that a lot of things and what was difficult for me to reach out for help was just feeling embarrassed, you know, ashamed to have gotten myself in so much trouble. What would you suggest for people who are feeling that very way? You know, just go ahead and take the plunge, or how do they trickle out of that fear?
They're going to have to take the plunge. Somebody's going to have to knock it out of them. I mean, it's going to have to be a miracle. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who are embarrassed. And I think it really stems back to the fact that we're so educated in our respective professions. You know, I've met a lot of well-to-do people, PhDs, you know, multiple degrees, just accomplished people. And then you mention money, I mean, they become like a toddler. I didn't know this. I'm so afraid. You know, there's this expectation that when I have a certain status in this country, I'm just supposed to know all of this, and it's totally false. And so until we can grow up and have that conversation, whether it's with a person one-on-one, whether it's just in our circle of friends, you know, somebody's got to think differently and say, you know what, if we want to do this, then we got to make some changes. And we can't feel embarrassed, or if we do, it's temporary. I'd rather be embarrassed right now and learn from it and move on instead of carrying this bag of this baggage with me for the rest of my life. A lot of people carry this bag around forever, and they don't have to, but they're choosing to. So whenever you want to get on the boat to financial success, you know, by all means, there are plenty of boats waiting. This is when you gonna buy your ticket.
Well, Jasper, before we wrap up, tell us how to get on your boat. Where can we find you on the web? Where can we find you on social media? And, you know, how can people find out more information about the Urban Financial Services Coalition?
So they can find me. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm on Twitter. So you can find me, Jasper Smith. The handle on Twitter is Mr._Jasper_Smith, and that's both on Twitter and on Instagram. So it's Mr._Jasper_Smith. I love LinkedIn, especially from a professional standpoint. When it's, you know, really business related. I'd love if you reach out or connect with me on LinkedIn. You can search me Jasper. I think it's just Jasper Smith or Jasper E. Smith. They can find me there. The Urban Financial Services Coalition, the website is, our international site, our national site is www.ufscnet.org. That's our national site. So we have chapters throughout the country. And so they can always, they want to reach out specifically to me here in the Bay Area. We're on the national website as well. And then while I'm at it, Shannon, if you want to call me directly, the best number for me is 925-364-4669. And I'll even go a step further. They can email me, Jasper Smith, the number 0@yahoo.com.
Jasper, I really do want to thank you for being on. This is a powerful segment. Again, money has always been a touchy subject for me, my family. And in talking with you and being able to share this message with everybody, I'm hoping we can really get a few more people to hop on that boat.
Do you have an inspirational story to share? Are you a subject matter expert, or could your business use some additional exposure? Email info@reachforcosmos.com for features and sponsorship. As always, see you next Monday on Millennials Love.